Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone, and my co-host is back after, I don't know, weeks of hiatus. Weeks. You go on vacation to some...
That's bananas.
Okay, all right, whatever. You're busy.
First of all,
welcome back, Cameron.
I am busy, but can any of us... I mean, only there are a few of us. Actually, most people, I think, was it like 20% of the population declared unemployment during this
mess? Yeah, 30.
So most people are still at work, which is crazy to me when you drive around and think, you know, everything's closed. So how are most people still at work?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of amazing to me that only 30%
it really is, because everything shut down. I mean, everything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the food, I guess the food didn't, right? The restaurants didn't. I mean,
if you could do takeout.
Right, as long as you could do takeout, which I think most did.
Yeah.
I would bet, like, the deliveries, like the Papa John's, the pizza places, I would bet they did crazy. And I know the hardware stores have just killed it.
I know the owner of one of the Raising Cane's, and I talked to him early on in this.
Yeah.
And I said, how's things?
Yeah.
And he said, I was terrified at first. And he said, but he goes, we're doing better.
Yeah.
Than we were before.
Yes.
It's the only place to get something.
Right.
You know.
Well, or not only that, but think about this. People were afraid to go into grocery stores because you've got a mass amount of people. If you just go to Raising Cane's drive-thru, you're only touching one person. Now, two or three maybe have touched your food.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've been operating under, you
wearing
know,
gloves,
just for health department reasons,
masks.
They've been operating cleanly or supposed to have been for, you know, already. So it's kind of like that's one of the safest places to eat.
I ate mostly at home throughout all of this. Like, my wife and I went and got takeout the other night.
Yeah.
And this makes me a hypocrite because I was like, hey, everybody go get takeout because we need to support our restaurants. But I didn't.
That's true.
We went and got a takeout the other night for our first time.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I was like, really? I said, honey, you realize this is the first time we've spent money on food outside of our own kitchen for 8 weeks?
But isn't that part of, I mean, there's some wisdom there too. Maybe it makes you a hypocrite. But it does, I mean, there's some wisdom there too because first of all, let's be honest, you have a very particular diet.
I do.
Everyone's aware of what it is you eat.
And I'm also a damn good cook too.
That's right. Yes. And you, I love
you've had my steaks.
You post, well, oh, by the way, we'll do later on when need to discuss. I just aged a steak only 2 days in the refrigerator and then cooked it in a very peculiar way. It turned out to be the best steak I've ever had.
I want to hear this.
I'll tell you later.
Go ahead.
I just think it's just interesting that the whole idea of the places that have done well, or as you say, you know, Raising Cane's as an example, or that particular Raising Cane's has done better. Like, you know, the hardware stores have done better because we're home with nothing, or a lot of us are home with nothing to do. So we do a project, which you and I talked about early on one of our episodes. That's what, you know, that's what we should be doing. Like do something that you haven't had time to do, or you've given yourself an excuse because you say you haven't had time to do. Now you don't have that excuse.
My garage is organized.
My bedroom is cleaned for the first time in probably 4 years.
Yeah, I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
Well, and there's some elements of capitalism that have been kind of like awesome.
Uh-huh.
You know, for instance, going back to the Raising Cane's thing, prior to this, I would have put like, I'm sorry, Chick-fil-A's drive-thru is the best at handling long lines fast.
They're incredible.
But the Raising Cane's kind of adopted a similar pattern.
Oh, really?
They did two lines wide. They had people out taking orders ahead of time and relaying them back. And they got fast. And I'm like, this is the one thing, if you can find those sort of silver linings in all of this, I'm like, capitalism is forcing, iron sharpens iron.
Yes.
You know
well
what
said.
I mean? And
yeah. I'll give you a perfect example. So Chick-fil-A probably, I'm going to bet, of all the fast food restaurants, Chick-fil-A killed it more than anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were already, because here's the thing, when you want to go, oh, Chick-fil-A sounds good. But if Chick-fil-A was slow in that drive-thru, if they were consistently and by reputation slow, you wouldn't go. And I'll give you an example. And I don't want to call out any particular restaurant, but I'll mention one that I love, and that's Steak and Shake.
Oh, yeah.
I love Steak and Shake. But Steak and Shake's, because, and look, I'll give them credit. it's because they're cooking everything to order.
Right.
Right. So you order, and then you're going to sit there and wait. But that limits me sometimes in when I'm on the road, and that's the problem with being on the road is you don't necessarily eat healthy all the time. But
yeah,
that limits me of, okay, boy, Steak and Shake, one of their steak burgers sounds fantastic right now, but I'm going to sit there for 15 minutes. Where mm-hmm. I know, regardless of how busy Chick-fil-A is, I know I'm going to be around that circle in about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm going to have my food in my hand in 3 minutes.
Out of here.
Do what?
I said 3 to 5 minutes. Out of here.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And then you're also getting the fantastic chicken sandwich, which I never had the Popeyes chicken sandwich, but I didn't get into that whole debacle.
Well, and that's the thing about Popeyes. Popeyes took chicken and threw it on bread. But, but I'm going to tell you, Popeyes chicken doesn't need to have a chicken sandwich to be awesome.
Yeah.
Their hot fried chicken with some of their mashed potatoes with that Louisiana gravy.
Yes.
That is to die for when you want something that is going to cause you to die.
You don't eat mashed potatoes.
I don't. I don't eat any of that stuff. But every now and then, you know, like every now and then I will eat mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to do it, you know, if I'm going to like completely destroy my body, then I'm going to do it in a way that it's incredibly decadent.
Yeah,
and Cajun gravy is
unbelievable. I love the idea. And I agree with you, but I love the idea that Popeyes is decadent.
Yeah, it is, man.
That's what I'm saying is I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just, you know, would anyone else think, oh, look at that fast food restaurant. That's got decadent meals.
No. Let's talk about the Karens. Okay, so this concept is fascinating to me. This starts with Kentucky.com had a story about the health department getting one complaint after a video surfaced, of course, at the Paddock, South Limestone, you know, reopening. Bars were allowed to kind of open up.
Yep.
This video gets taken. Now, here's the problem I have with a lot of this stuff. The owner of the Paddock is like, guys, this got taken way out of context. I don't know how they took this video in a short snippet, but people were being far more distanced from each other than this video seems to indicate.
Mm.
And that's another problem is videos don't always give you the full context, as we always find out with those kinds of stories.
Well, but rarely do we ever find out because, again, I don't want to get back into this rabbit hole you and I always go down when we're together, but the media is going to tell you the story they want to instead of the full story. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, this is just, to me, the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Kevin James's short film. It was a 2-minute YouTube video. It's hilarious about the culture of fear. And look it up. If you haven't seen Kevin James, look up
not.
Kevin James short film on fear. And it'll pop up on YouTube. And it's a 2-minute hilarious video that totally capsulizes the whole idea. We're calling them the Karens. You know, Karen, that meme came from the middle class minivan mom in yoga pants who's slightly overweight in her yoga pants, and she goes into the McDonald's and goes, I want to see the manager, and she has that coiffed hair. You know what I'm talking about? That's the Karen. So now we have an entire brigade of them.
Thank you, because you mentioned that before we hit play and before you said the Karens, and I thought the Karens were like a family here in Lexington.
No.
I thought, oh, Mr. and Mrs. Karen.
Yeah,
I had no idea what you're talking about.
No, it's the middle class yoga pant wearing, slightly overweight, minivan white mom with the coiffed hair. I want to see the manager, right? She's the first to pull out her phone and film you when you're doing something she doesn't like.
Yeah.
You
know? And that's the key. And that's what I love about this conversation is this business of I don't know what you call it, cultural shaming or just
it's a culture of shaming.
Yeah.
I think it's born out of that. I think we set ourselves up for this. Because now we have people that are there's a book called Obedience to Authority. Okay. Mm. This is a book that I think a lot of people should read if you're interested in liberty. It explores, now do not, please do not misunderstand me. I want to be 100% clear because I think anytime anybody invokes the Nazis, they've lost the argument, right?
Right. Yes. But especially recently.
Right. Exactly. But the book explores finding out why normal people, everyday people in Germany, went along with orders and obeyed authority and did the atrocities that happened.
Well, and you know what's interesting? Before you go any further, Leland, because this just popped in my head. You and I have an affinity for a gentleman named Jordan Peterson.
Yes.
Who I've heard so many of his speeches, so many of his talks, and absolutely love what he says. But one of the things that he said, and I was fascinated by this, and he convinced me that it was true. Because he was talking about this very thing, is that because remember, Hitler was elected. Now, granted, he took more and more power after he'd been elected, but he was elected. He wasn't a dictator who assumed control by military. He did that in the war. He was elected by the people of Germany. But what's interesting is that Jordan Peterson talked about the fact that all of us look back on the Nazis and say that very thing. We say, we would have never elected that man. We would have never followed around right. with a lot of what he did. But what Jordan says is, yeah, you would have. You would have, because those weren't necessarily horrible people. The people of Germany weren't necessarily horrible people. They had reasons for their, you know, it was, there was financial reasons. There was the crisis.
So their economy collapsed.
Their economy completely collapsed. And then inflation took off. And then they had nothing. And so they were desperate. And so they elected a man who promised them something and also promised them independence. And that's, there was a pride thing in Germany with that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it just, then he started slowly taking power from within. And then all of a sudden he silently built his army, his air force in particular, and his U-boats. And then all of a sudden he started taking land, and England and specifically France allowed him to take far more than he should have. You know, before they did something, and by that right. point, the Nazi army was, or the Nazi military was fast moving and doing what they were doing.
And the culture that they had set up within their country of spying on each other and telling on each other is what drove the fear that drove the compliance.
Yes,
and that's the point. And so, again, I am not in any way trying to make the comparison directly. But what I am saying is we are in dangerous waters when we turn on each other. You know, when I was I said this the other day. I was talking to Representative Dan Crenshaw on this podcast. And I said, look, my generation has never had to do anything hard. I watched my grandparents. I used to make fun of my grandparents. I feel bad now that I made fun of my mamaw and papaw because she used to have they had a back room in the house on the porch. And it was a covered porch. It was, you know, protected porch. You open it. They had three massive industrial freezers in a row.
Yeah.
Open it up and it's full of Cool Whip bowls that have leftovers in it.
Right.
And I used to make fun of that. And now I'm like, holy cow, great. My grandparents lived through the Great Depression. They lived through rationing. They lived through World War II. They understood. We used to laugh. My papa, he would have, there was an RC Cola, glass RC Cola bottle in the refrigerator. Okay.
Yeah.
And it wasn't RC Cola that was in it. He had one of them little rubber caps, and he would fill it up every time he was empty with Czech Cola from Winn-Dixie. You remember Winn-Dixie?
Oh, wow. He would I don't remember.
He was reusing the same bottle for years.
You mentioned Czech Cola. That reminds me, because what was in my parents' or my grandparents' household down in Barberville, Kentucky, my papa and granny, was Tab.
Tab.
And if you look up – what I love about Tab – what I loved about Tab is Tab used saccharin, I believe, was the sweetener.
Yep.
Okay. And then even on the Tab cans.
Worse than cancer sticks.
There was the worry, or there was, I guess there had been some studies or evidence that saccharin caused cancer in laboratory rats.
Right.
That was literally, to my memory, and I'll be happily corrected, but that was written on the Tab cans themselves.
Yes.
Is that saccharin, you know, it's a saccharin sweetener, and then I have an asterisk, and down below it say, saccharin has been known or found to cause cancer in laboratory rats. And I'm sitting back thinking, the fact that they had to, or that they did, write that on literally on their cans, every soda you're drinking, I thought, how did they ever sell anything?
Okay, so the whole point that I was making is that our generation has not ever had to do anything hard. Even 9/11, we watched our country come together on TV. Okay, we watched the last wars on TV. Somewhere along the way, we've developed this culture of shaming / virtue signaling.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to address something here, because you and I were talking before we went on the air, and I want to give you an opportunity to make this point, because I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Certain elements of shaming in culture are what keep us from having to have a totalitarian state. Shaming is not always bad.
Right.
Let's make that point very clear right up front. Go ahead.
Well, I think the example we were talking about, again, now I guess I've lost my argument, because I'm going to go back to the Nazis, aren't I? but the example I was using, or white supremacy, right?
Right.
White supremacy is something that, to me, there should be a shaming, a public shaming. However, the more I thought about it, just as we've been talking the last 10 minutes, here's the thing. I'm all for, and this is why I said I think I'm going to be 50-50 on this, because I think the better outcome, or the better example of how to deal with, let's look at it. Okay, you and I share faith, okay?
Right.
The best witnessing, the best sharing of our faith is not in what I do and in what I've done for 21 years or 22, maybe 22 years this June. In June 3rd of 2020, that'll be 22 years. So what I've done for 22 years is I've gone around the country, predominantly in the Southeast, but I've hit 48 states in being able to preach in 48 states. And I share my faith publicly in, you know, large and relatively large, sometimes with 25 people in a church, sometimes with, 24,000 people at the Thompson Bowling Arena down in Knoxville. But I've been able to share my faith. That's a wonderful way of sharing our faith. Okay. That is preaching, and that is one. However, the more valuable, the more important, and the more effective way of sharing our faith is one-on-one evangelism. Mm-hmm. So then let's take that and extrapolate it out to shaming. Okay, shaming, public shaming, video shaming that we're talking about by these Karens, which I just love that. I wish I'd understood that earlier.
The Karen Brigade.
Yeah, that can be effective, but you know what it does? It more causes strife and hate.
Yep.
And it turns people, like, because we publicly embarrass people, that the people are more, those people that we're trying to publicly embarrass are more likely to ensconce themselves in their behavior or their belief or their attitude, as opposed to if we went to them in
love, run back to their tribe.
If we went to them in sincerity, in love, and here's the thing, privately, if we went to them and said, hey, listen, I want you to think through some of the things. Here's my opinion. Okay, you share your opinion. Here's my opinion. Here's the evidence of my opinion. Share with me the evidence of your opinion. If we did that, that would take, I just feel like that would be a more effective way of, because the one time, listen, we've all got egos. And the moment you embarrass someone, it takes an adult.
Right.
It takes a immature adult to realize, you know, if they're wrong, that they're wrong, and to publicly admit they're wrong. And that's the one big problem I have with politicians. I will give, and let's do this again, let's be fair, I will give Andy Beshear credit for something. And I've been frustrated by, you know, I love the first few weeks as the pandemic took off, but then it got into, I was like, okay, every day it's Sesame Street sign language. Man, we just want the numbers and give it, you know, and it kind of got into this maybe overreach. And I know you've talked a lot about that, but the one thing I'll give him credit for was the Tupac thing. He made a big gaffe in the Tupac Shakur thing,
right?
Because that guy actually existed in Lexington, was struggling, and there was, I will tell you from personal experience with someone in my family, there still is a huge problem with how the unemployment is being distributed in Kentucky right now. It has taken forever. This person in my family, they spent 16 hours a day on the internet trying to figure out why this hadn't gone through, and one of the reasons
I can't look for a job.
Well, it's the whole point.
Right.
And one of the reasons it hadn't gone through is because the state hadn't asked for information that they were supposed to ask for on day one. They waited till day 30 to ask for.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, this person's on the phone trying to call, and they're getting some person that the state contracted with, who's up in Michigan. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe that's incorrect, but why wouldn't we give these sudden jobs to handle this to someone down in Kentucky? But the point is that Andy did come out the next day and apologize. Now, I didn't hear the apology, but I was told by many people that he did. I'm going to take it that it came across very sincere and very, that's perfect. But my problem with politicians is so few of them will do that.
Right.
So few of them will say, you know what?
I was wrong. Yeah.
End of story, period.
Yeah, kudos to him for that.
And yes, absolutely.
But to the point of Karens,
the Karens.
This is the problem that I have with this. It's grounded in virtue signaling, and virtue signaling is a particularly insidious element of today's tribalistic society. And we do it on both sides. It's not confined to the left. It's also on the right, and it's this idea that I'm better than you because I recognize how you're flawed.
Yes.
That's what it is.
But Leland, that's 12-year-old behavior.
It is.
That's
but
what
now
you and I did.
It's pervasive throughout adulthood.
When you and I were children, that's how we were bullied, and that's how we bullied.
Yes.
Is that we pointed out the weakness of the other, and we did it loudly, and we did it publicly, and we shamed them.
But
what did that do? Well, that sent – and when I was bullied – I'm sure I bullied some kids, but when I was bullied, I went home crying because I was a little kid who didn't know how to handle it, right?
Now imagine that being on YouTube.
Exactly. Well, and think about it. You and I are public figures on some small level, okay? But I mean, it's when that happens to us, when someone calls me out on Twitter, that's a very public way of calling me out. Now, on some level, I think it's fair because I've made a statement on Twitter, which is public, right?
Right.
And if we want to even go back to the, I think there's biblical truth to the fact that if someone does something publicly, there is something that's okay about, you know, taking this public to pointing out the fault publicly too.
Right.
But I just think it's smarter and more wisdom in the long run for most cases. And I think that's what we can talk about is which cases are which. And I don't know that I'm wise enough to know the difference.
Yeah.
But which cases are, this is something that I can handle privately. And probably this person will hear me better if I do this privately. This video public shaming of, look what I found. Look what these people are doing. And I'm a good person. I'm not doing this. I find this horrid. I find this insulting. I find this, you know, that's the thing where I'm like, okay, what are you getting out of this other than this false sense of being better than somebody else?
Well, there's a culture that's arisen. It's Twitter culture.
Yeah, it is.
It's the idea of owning someone. And it's rooted in this.
Right. That's the word that's used to.
Right. It's rooted in this virtue signaling atmosphere. Again, I'm pointing out my opponent's flaws.
Yeah.
Because it covers up mine.
Right.
And I own you. But the problem is, it's spilled over into normal society now.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, people going around and watching other people and then posting and shaming them. Look, we have two legitimate opinions in society right now: to mask or not to mask.
Mm. Yes.
I
love that you say legitimate, because I've struggled with that both ways here recently.
There's legitimate studies out there that show that, one, the masks don't help, and two, they actually could be detrimental to certain people.
Right.
There's other legitimate studies that show that they actually do help, and it kind of makes sense to me that they do. I personally wear a mask in grocery stores or stores that ask me to.
Yes.
Because it's the same reason I don't carry openly with my firearm. I don't want to necessarily freak people out.
Exactly.
But if it doesn't ask me to, then I prefer to go the route of, I'm going to go ahead and expose my immune system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do my best to stay as healthy as possible. And I'm gonna fight this the way human beings have been fighting this for years. I may end up being wrong, God forbid. I hope not.
Yeah, right.
But that's the way that I'm choosing. And I have legitimate scientific reasons for why I've chosen to do that. Now, that means that the guy that has a mask, I'm not going to make fun of him unless he's wearing his mask in his car by himself.
Well,
I'm going to make fun of that guy.
Yeah, right.
But not the person wearing it in the produce section.
Well, but here's I was going to give you one example of when they do need to be wearing their mask in the car, and that was the mailman, because my mailman started wearing it. And then I thought, why is he doing that? Unless he's showing symptoms. And I thought, well, whether he's showing symptoms or not, that's the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems with this virus. Is that you can carry it for – some people can carry it and never know it. Some people can carry it for 7 to 14 days before they start showing symptoms. But I thought through it and thought, wait a minute. He's literally got my mail, like, within spittle distance of his mouth.
Yes, 100%.
And you know, if the virus does live on things, can live on I don't know, substances.
Well, now they're saying that it doesn't.
Then it's a problem. So, it's one of those things where – the mask thing to me, I'll give this one example, because this came up in particular to me and my girlfriend this weekend. We went to church last weekend. First time I've been to church in almost a year, to be honest, because to my church,
usually
I should
you're
say.
Speaking.
Usually
you're the preacher.
Yeah, usually I'm traveling around preaching. Though I will admit, there have been times where, Sunday morning, I just slip in instead of going to my church, and I could have gone to my church. But nonetheless, let's look forward, not behind. I went to my church Sunday. I can't tell you how much I needed it. Can't tell you how much I loved it. And my church, and my church is Buck Run Baptist in Frankfort, Kentucky. And my church is doing everything as the governor asks when it comes to the masks, right?
Right.
I think we're at 33% capacity. We had three services, 200 people total, because we have a huge auditorium. And so we went with masks. Now, I think either I or my girlfriend posted it on Facebook that, hey, you know, look, it's good to be back in church, and then there was a picture of us in masks. And one of her friends, an older friend, who is very, let's see, I talked to her about it. He's very opinionated. He's very sold out to his opinions, which is fine. You and I are too. He in a fun way, because he knows her, just commented on the Facebook post and get those masks off, and then went on to kind of bash Bashir. And I'm sitting there, I'm reading this, and I don't know this guy, and I'm reading this, and I love the way she handled it. She went back at him on something. And again, remember, this was a friendly joust. This was not, none of this was done in anger. And then finally she said, look, my church, my place of worship is how she worded it. My place of worship asked me to do this, so I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved is, I argued with my mother all last week about wearing masks, because I feel the same way you do. I see the benefits of it. I also see, wait a minute, what about my immune system? I want to build up antibodies to this, because I think there are some people who are saying, look, we're all going to wind up with this.
We're all going to get it at some point.
Yeah. So I want to go ahead and get that over with, or at least build, I want to keep my immune system working.
Right.
And that was one of the early things you and I even talked about on an earlier show, is that going to be the problem? So, but I walked into Kroger the other day. Now, to be fair to me, I had just forgotten. I hadn't even thought about it. Did not even think about taking my mask. And some of the glares I was getting. Now, no one said anything to me, so there was no verbal public shaming. But I did feel shamed. But again, because it was private, here's how I left there. And again, it was private in the sense of people were just looking. I got a lot of looks. Some of them were just looks. They weren't necessarily mean looks, but they were looks. And I felt like I got the message of, we don't appreciate this. No one had the gall to say something to me publicly, to video me, to out me, or anything like that. And so I left that Kroger with this attitude. You know what? They're right. Because most of the glares I was getting were coming from elderly people.
Right.
And I thought, they're right. Now, all I have to do is, if I want to protect
my
immune system.
They've been told that you are putting them in danger.
That's right. Well, and here's the thing.
If it makes them feel uncomfortable, I'll wear a mask.
And as you said, yes. And I think that's it. That's one of – I think that could be a slippery slope. Because I don't want to make people feel uncomfortable purposefully. And
right.
I'm talking beyond this COVID-19. I mean, I don't want to make people – and that's, again, back to the concealed carry. Right.
Mm-hmm.
When I went camping the other day, I took my firearm with me. Not camping. I'm going camping here soon. But when I went hiking the other day, I took my conceal. And that's the point. That's the reason for the conceal, is I don't want to be on that trail and anyone thinking, oh, my gosh, I don't want to make anyone nervous.
Yep. Yeah.
But I want to feel like, OK, if worse comes to worst, I've got something.
Yeah.
Right. Whether it's a four-legged creature or a two-legged creature, I want to feel like, OK, I'm but I don't want to make anyone feel uncomfortable. Same thing with the masks.
By the way,
I can build up my immune system walking into Kroger. The moment I get inside, that mask goes on.
That's what I do. I just put it on as soon as I'm in the store, and I take it off as soon as I come out.
Yeah, and I think that's smart, because I think that's the best of both worlds. And again, you're not purposefully, my issue.
Plus, I have a stylish UK mask that was made by a company called Bear Hugs. Shameless plug in Louisville and Clarksville, Indiana.
Leland,
and they are freaking awesome. And they sent my wife and I both a UK Wildcat mask, so I like to sport it.
Well,
I like flying my colors.
You're out in, here's the thing. So I've had probably five or six different UK masks sent to me in by very kind people and very well-meaning people. I think me wearing a UK anything is a little too much on the nose sometimes. I purposely don't. I used to have my truck I had was a North Carolina blue. It's kind of in between a North Carolina blue and a Kentucky blue.
Disgusting.
I bought it because it was for sale at the price I wanted. I thought nothing of the color. I normally don't when it comes to vehicles. But everyone came up to me and said, oh, yeah, I got the Kentucky blue, don't you? And first of all, I turned around like, That's not Kentucky blue. Yeah, and I would always find this little bit of, come on, man, that's not. I'm not going to walk around in Kentucky stuff all the time. So what's funny is I've got a Kentucky mask, but on the other side it's green, and I wear the green side out all the time.
That's what you're wearing. I've got this picture right now of you and your girlfriend in church.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
But I can tell your mask doesn't match your shirt. Your girlfriend's, on the other hand, is quite pretty.
Well,
she's an attractive lady.
Yes, she is.
Her mask is fitting. It makes her eyes sparkle, and you look like Bane.
Well, let me tell you what I look like, because she and I laughed at this, because I can't tell you how many. It's one of those things where I probably took that. I'm doing it with my phone. Now, my hands shake sometimes from something neurological, and so I'm bad at taking selfies, which is good, because I think we take far too many selfies anyway.
God, I can't. I'm totally the
worst, that was probably the picture you're looking at. It's probably attempt number 10 before the service started.
So you stood in church. Here's what you did wrong. It wasn't the mask. You stood in church for 10 minutes.
First of all,
holding up the line to get to the pew.
No. That
Hold
was
on,
in
I
our
pew. Take a perfect selfie.
No. That was in. First of all, that was in our seat. Second of all, I finally stopped trying to take them because my hands were shaking. So I gave it to her. I said, "Here, you do it." What I love about that picture, it happens to me all the time. When I smile, my eyes close.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's what I love about that mask, just emphasizes it more.
That's hilarious.
Her eyes are sparkling because her eyes are bright and beautiful and wide open. Mine have the possibility of being beautiful, but you never know it because I'm squinting.
Right. That's hilarious. All right. We only got like 9 minutes here.
Okay.
I wanted to go through some stories. And just to wrap up the whole Karen's point, I think the point of our conversation is shaming can be good in certain instances, but the way it's being done broadly right now in society is an extension of the Twitter culture, which is virtue signaling, which is people covering up their own faults by destroying other people publicly as much as possible. Yeah. And it's a very dangerous, slippery slope.
Let me ask you this, Leland. Do you have a problem with someone who – okay, so they took the video of – did you say it was O'Shea's?
No, I think it was a Paddock.
The Paddock, okay. Someone takes that video and they send it to the mayor, the police, the health department.
They send it to the health department.
Okay, all right. How was that? Well, my question is, how was that video outed?
They also went on Twitter.
There we go. See, that's my problem. I understand, okay, if someone wants to do it, send it to, now it's tattling, but on some level, that's how a lot of, we are in a lot of things. Hey,
yeah, give it
someone came in my house and robbed me. Well, that's tattling too on some level, right? Even though it's probably justified.
Shaming those burglars.
That's my point. So if you are genuinely concerned a law is being broken, and here's the evidence, and you send it to the police or the health department,
right?
Okay, I understand that. The problem is back to the, as you say, the Twitter culture or the Twitter shaming, where, but I want everyone to know that I found him.
Yeah,
that I was the one
look
that
at
caught
me.
Them.
I'm so
look
awesome.
At what I'm doing. Look how magnanimous I am in following the laws, and how horrible these people are who aren't.
Yeah,
just do it privately. I mean, how much would that solve if we?
Or,
if you had to do it privately. Let the government do what they feel they need to do, or by law, let's do it that way, law what they need to do. And then, okay, fair enough.
Or
but
just
to do it, to tell everyone how, you know, look what's going on, look what I caught.
Yeah, where it comes down to masks, just wear your mask or don't. You know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to save the world because you got one guy in trouble because he went into the Whole Foods without a mask on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, just wear yours, keep your head down, stay 6 feet away, do what you got to do. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. Quick, rapid fire three topics.
Okay.
All right. Apparently, scientists have found a parallel universe. NASA scientists say they've discovered the existence of a parallel universe where time runs backwards. The group used the Antarctic Impulsive Transient Antenna.
Sure.
I know all about
that. Object.
High above the skies to find high energy particles. These heavy particles cannot pass through the Earth, so they are usually detected coming down from space. However, the particles from the recent ANITA Cosmic Ray Project were seen coming up out of the Earth. Researchers hypothesized that this inverse evidence suggests that a parallel universe could be running in reverse from us. They also say this isn't the first or the second time that such impossible events have been recorded and observed. So in that universe, I just read this way. Observed and recorded been have had events possible in... I can't even do it.
I thought this was a rapid fire.
I'm sorry. What do you think about a universe that's parallel to ours that goes the other direction in time? What do you think about that?
There was a key word you said in there, and that was hypothesized.
Yeah.
That's what stood out to me. That's what, anytime I see a study, I look out for words like could. Such and such could.
May.
Such and such may. Right? And then when it's reported on the media, again, not to get back in this rabbit hole, but this fear of culture, or this culture of fear, I should say, that's where it starts. All of a sudden, no one's taking Advil. The other day, I was in Walgreens, and their big sign right next to all
no
of the
Tylenol,
ibuprofen.
No Tylenol, plenty of Advil.
All of the ibuprofen had signs on it saying, there is no evidence, there have been no studies linking ibuprofen to an increased opportunity to get COVID-19. They had to put that up because somebody said something and everybody believed it.
So wait a minute. In this parallel universe that's backwards, you can still hit three-pointers.
I guess I could because
you're just now hitting your prime.
I would be, if it's going backwards, I'd be back in my early 20s, if not my teens.
You're just
late
now
teens.
Nailing it, man.
That's when I was unstoppable, well, at least in one aspect of basketball. Very stoppable in every other aspect.
All right, Americans miss driving. They plan to take a car vacation. Mm. I think part of this is because they're afraid of planes, too.
Yeah.
76% of Americans miss being in their cars. Before the coronavirus, 53% were driving daily, while since then, only 20% have been. Mm. 60% of folks are looking forward to taking more road trips because the coronavirus quarantine. 57% planning their next vacation by car.
Yep. I will tell you this. I've got my job requires me in planes. But it doesn't require. It's more efficient in planes. It doesn't require.
Yeah.
And when my company turns me back loose to get on the road, the first place I think I've got to go is Georgia. That's easily drivable, and I'm planning on driving for that reason. I just feel safer. And I've always felt more comfortable, not because of the fear thing, but because I guess statistics say flying is more safer. I just feel I like being in control. I like, oh, if I want to stop here at this peach market in Georgia, oh, I can. Me I don't too. Have to fly over it and say, ask the pilots to step down and let's take a look.
But what you're saying right now is exactly why I think this story is actually indicative that they keep telling us that self-driving cars are right around the corner, and they're not.
Yes. No, I agree with that.
Because of what you just said and because of that poll, it reveals that we actually still like to drive and we still like to be in control of our own destiny.
And I think if there ever are self-driving cars, there will be a manual override.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
And I will always use I just bought a car and it has that lane protection thing.
Well, let me tell you something. That stuff kind of works.
Yeah. Well, I turned it off. Because I mean, it's disconcerting when you're going around a curve and I'm getting into it a little bit.
No, I know.
You know, I like to get into it a little bit.
Let me ask this.
Stop it.
I know. Is it disconcerting? To me, it wakes me up. Like, because sometimes I can not drift asleep, but sometimes I don't know that I'm paying as close attention to everything going on the road as I should be. And, buddy, when that thing kind of lights up on the dash, because I've rented cars with this technology, don't have one, but when that lights up, I'm like, oh. Oh, all right.
I don't mind that one so much. The one I do mind is the braking technology that when it thinks you're too close to a car in front of you, because I rented a car.
Yeah.
I was driving through Kansas.
Oh. Nothing in
going
Kansas.
No, absolutely nothing. I'm going 85 miles an hour. And all of a sudden the car starts to like hit the brakes and I look up. You know what happened?
Did your car hit the brakes?
No. I was going under an underpass.
Yeah.
And there was a semi-truck going across the underpass. It thought that there was a collision coming. It didn't know the difference. It didn't realize it was above me.
That okay.
I was pissed.
I would have been too. I would have been irate. But I will also tell you that is – I'm hoping that's an outlier case because I've had that – I've rented cars with this before.
Yeah.
And it's never saved me from – well, actually, you know what? One time it probably did save me from a little bump. Because I was throwing mine on a little bit too late and it caught it.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of that happening. That would have absolutely enraged me. Because you're going highway speeds. Did it throw them on? I mean, did it lock them up?
It didn't lock them up. It was just okay. But it freaked me out because I'm driving along and I'm happily doing 85, listening to, you know, Joe Rogan podcast or something. And all of a sudden the car's like, whoa. And I'm like, what? And I'm looking because it's warning me that this thing's coming from the side. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah. And then I realize it's the overpass and it totally got it wrong.
You know what? At one point it could be they could add that technology of not only are they going to throw the brakes on, but they might turn the car.
Yeah, that's going to freak
people
out.
Then that would have been, you know, going at that kind of speed. Now, I'm sure they would have some sort of elimination for that. But, yeah, that would have freaked me out.
All right. Most Americans don't remember the last time they wore pants. This is a new survey. 2 in 3 Americans say they don't remember the last time they wore real pants.
I would think there would be 2 to 3 because you brought up the yoga pants earlier.
Yeah.
I think there's a great deal of the population who doesn't remember it before COVID-19.
Yeah, I think you're
because
right.
They were already wearing yoga pants everywhere.
But tell me you haven't done a Zoom meeting in boxer shorts with a sport coat. Because I have.
Well, I haven't had to. None of my Zoom. I've not had many Zoom meetings. Just because of the particular nature of my work. I've not had to have my conference calls have been by phone. I've not had to do much Zoom. As a matter of fact, I was advised on some level not to, at least originally, because the Zoom technology, though it worked, it had a lot of security holes. And so the people I worked with didn't want to, not necessarily the company I worked with, but the people I was having these calls with, they didn't want to use it. But I have been on a couple. But no, I will say this, to the point of the study, I'm wearing sweatpants. It has been, with the exception of my girlfriend and I, we decided for this very reason we were going to have a date night the other night. Even though we were going to be home eating dinner, we were going to dress up.
Yeah.
And so I put on a suit.
I saw that picture. You looked very nice.
Yeah, a suit jacket. She put on a fantastic dress. And we just had a date night in because we felt like I was honestly scared to put on a suit. I was scared to put on jeans. Like, is anything going to fit?
Right.
Because I probably gained 20, 15 pounds in the midst of this craziness, even though I was committed to not do that at the beginning of it. You know, so, but fortunately, because things are tying down and I'm getting back to a normal regimen, I'm starting to drop it. But it's just, I was worried, like, is anything I have? She suggested this idea, and I thought, is anything going to fit? Am I going to have, is it impossible to buy a new suit if I have to? So
that's hilarious. I love it. All right. We both got to bounce. We want to thank Toby Ballinger.
Yes, absolutely.
Who on Facebook recommended our podcast. He said honest opinions that I agree with most of, attempts to be unbiased even when they don't agree with popular opinions.
Yep.
That is a terrific compliment. Yeah,
absolutely. I will take that above almost any other compliment. So one of the best things we can do is that we try to be fair.
Yeah, and we're growing, Cameron. We're getting several thousand hits a week,
awesome.
Downloads a week, which is awesome. And so what we're asking is, if you want this to continue, please continue to share it. It's a free download on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Spreaker, and on iHeartRadio's app. Just go and search The Disruption Zone. And you'll find it right there. And please, if you're on Apple Podcasts, take a couple of minutes and give us a good review like Toby did.
Yes, please.
Because it always makes us feel really good about ourselves, and we go around pat ourselves on the back. So
that's right. We pat each other on the
back.
Yeah.
All right. Cameron, thank you. Love you, man. It's good to have you back on again. Appreciate you. All right. That's it for me and Cameron Mills. Thanks, by the way. It's JP Web Design. If you want to check out our website, they did it, and they did a terrific job. And also, big thank you to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, dxaudio.com. For all your production needs, they help with the production side of this program. Thanks again for listening to The Disruption Zone. He's Cameron Mills. I'm Leland Conway.